If you have not already, let me invite you right now to open to that passage that was just read for us, 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And having heard that beautiful definition by the Apostle Paul of love, I want to direct your attention to the very last verse in that same chapter, down in verse 13. Paul closes this love chapter with this statement. And now these three remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. Jesus is the one who taught Paul that. Jesus is the one who first said that. He was asked on one occasion, "What is the greatest commandment?" And he didn't say they're all the same. He didn't say, well, it depends on the situation. Without any hesitation, Jesus answered that love of God and love of our fellow man are the two greatest commandments. He says these are the basis for everything that God has said. Now, Jesus also went on to offer a dire warning. And it was applicable in the first century. It is applicable today in the world in which we live. I don't have to tell you that the world in which we live is growing more and more wicked. And one of the consequences of living in a society that is growing more and more wicked is what it does even to the people of God. Jesus warned that the day was coming. This is in Matthew 24. He says, the day is coming when, because of the increase of wickedness, he says, the love of most will grow cold. That frightens me. Because whether we want to admit it or not, whether we like it or not, the church is impacted by the world in which we live. And Jesus warns that with the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. That's why it's so important that we constantly keep our focus on the main thing. And Jesus says the main thing is love. In verse 1, he starts off by saying this, Paul does, if I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. When he talks there about tongues, he is looking specifically and addressing specifically the Corinthian church, which prided themselves most of all in their ability to speak in tongues. That was one of the miraculous gifts God had given to the church, and they seemed to emphasize this. And they took greatest pride of all in the ability to speak in tongues. And so he addresses this first of all because apparently they were doing it in an unloving way. He says it doesn't matter if you can speak in the tongues of men, any languages of man that was prevalent in the first century. And he goes on to say, even if you can speak in the tongues of angels. I've wondered about this, and this has caused a lot of discussion. What does that mean, being able to speak in the tongues of angels? Well, I went back and looked at all the references I could find to angels and the languages that angels spoke, and they always, at least in every recorded instance we have in the Bible, they always spoke in the local language in which they appeared. They didn't seem to have any special different language. There's no verse in the Bible that indicates that there is some angelic language different from human languages that they speak today in heaven. I've decided that Paul is using hyperbole here when he talks about the tongues of angels. He's saying if you can speak in the tongues of men, even if you could speak some angelic language, without love, he says it's two trash can lids banging together. There's no value in it. There's no good to it. Oratory is no substitute for love. You can have the right words and the wrong heart, and that is a constant danger among God's people. He goes on and says in verse 2, if I have the gift of prophecy, another one of the gifts that the Corinthians possessed that they valued very highly, even to the point of disrupting the assembly, as we're going to see, and utilizing this gift in an unloving way. He says, even if I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. The greatest, most insightful teacher, the most knowledgeable instructor in the Word, can stand before a church and amaze them with these insights and this level of knowledge, but he says, unless that is motivated by a heart of love, and unless it's demonstrated with a heart of love, that it's absolutely worthless. You know, a person that is a person of deep faith, that's a pretty valuable thing. Faith is taught throughout Scripture. Abraham was lauded for his faith, the father of the faithful. We have a whole chapter devoted to faith, just like this chapter that is devoted to love. Hebrews chapter 11, and we have all these men and women of faith. But Paul says there's something greater than faith. Now abides faith, hope, and love, but the greatest is love. And even if you have faith in God, and you trust Him implicitly, and you rely on that faith and lean on that faith, if you do not have the essential ingredient of love, even great faith is worthless in the sight of God. And then he goes on to say, in the next verse, verse 3, if I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames but have not love, I gain nothing. I stand in awe of those who have been blessed by God and who give generously. And this church is full of generous givers. I'm even more in awe of some that we have here who are never acknowledged or noticed. Those who live on fixed incomes and who, like that widow that Jesus pointed out, give sacrificially out of the little that they have. And as amazing as generosity is, and as much of a Christ-like quality that is, Paul says there's something more important than that. You can be the most generous person on the face of the earth, and if your giving is not motivated by love, then it counts for naught. Zippo in the eyes of God. He goes on to talk about one who gives their body to be surrendered to the flames. There's another word for that. That's martyr. Stephen was the first Christian martyr. He gave his body over to be stoned to death for the sake of Christ. But even that greatest of gifts, offering oneself, if it is not accompanied by love, it will count for nothing. I don't have to tell you that there are those involved in false religions who regularly offer their bodies as sacrifices. They're martyrs for their beliefs. But those beliefs are not motivated by love. They're motivated by hatred. And God says, even if you give your life, if it's not for love, it counts for nothing. No, the wrong motive makes even the greatest gift and the greatest sacrifice ineffectual. Motive is absolutely everything. Without the right motive, it doesn't matter what you do, how faithful you are, how generous you are. It makes no difference unless you are motivated by the love of Jesus Christ. Now, Paul goes on, and then he defines what love is. And here we see a clear definition of what Paul is talking about and what it means to be a loving person. It scares me, because if our motive is wrong, and if what Jesus predicted is true, as wickedness grows, love tends to wane, then that means that there is a very, very real possibility that we can allow other things to creep in to our motives and crowd out love, so that we're doing the right things, but we're doing them for the wrong reason. So I want to give you a test this morning, and it's a self-test, and we do this ever so often. I want you, as we go through, you can do it mentally, or you can pull out a card and rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 in these areas. If you're not sure how well you're doing in all these areas of love, maybe ask the person next to you to rate you, and they may have a better assessment than you do of yourself. But let's do some self-assessment here and look at this. Now, Paul begins to go through that beautiful passage, the passage that Wyman just read for us. And I want you to just think, how am I doing in this area of allowing love to be my motive? First of all, he says here that love is patient. Now, love is the oxygen of the kingdom. It's the critical component. And so he starts off with patience here. And I know there are folks who claim to be Christians and who will just admit, well, you know, I'm just not a very patient person. I just don't have a lot of patience. And you know what you're admitting? You're really saying, I just don't have much love. Because that is an exhibition of the level of love you have. It's seen, Paul says, first of all, in patience. Secondly, love is kind. You know what kindness is? It is love in the little things. Think of the kindest person that you know. They are someone who has learned to demonstrate love in the critical areas of life. There's another word for it, courtesy. Courtesy and kindness are first cousins. How well are you doing in that area? Would people describe you as one who is a kind individual? Those who know you best? Paul says, love does not envy. In your heart of hearts, when you hear that something good has happened to someone you're close to, when you hear that your brother-in-law has got a promotion, or that your mother-in-law is blessed in some way, close family members, close friends, are you envious? Do you begrudge it? Or can you genuinely from your heart rejoice with them without envy? Fourthly, if you have love as your motive, one of the qualities of that is that true love is not boastful. A braggart and a loving individual usually do not inhabit the same body. Someone who is loving tends to be a humble person. Fifthly, love is not proud. Did you know that in the list where God talks about the things that he hates, you will always find pride in that? God hates a prideful spirit, but he will elevate those who are not proud. Sixthly, love is not rude. Now, if you want a contrast to them, rudeness is the opposite of kindness. Rude people sometimes say, well, I just can't help it. I just tell it like it is. Well, they're acting unlovingly by that rude kind of behavior. I see rudeness more and more in our society. And we are to be like lights in darkness by the fact that we don't act rudely. And when someone is rude to us, and you can hardly go through a week without experiencing rudeness in some level on the roads or in the stores or at work, we're filled with a society that is increasingly rude. Children who are not taught to be respectful and mannerly. And so we're going to face that more and more. And the temptation for us as God's people is to react in the very same way that we're treated. But God's people act lovingly. Love is not rude, even when it's treated rudely. Love is not self-seeking. There are those in this world whose primary motive is number one. Underlying what they do, they're always thinking about how this will ultimately help me. Did you know that there are a lot of businesses, especially in the realm of sales, where you will be told, if you want to do good in this community, find a big church to get involved in and meet a lot of people, and that'll help you in your business. And there are people who go to church because they're looking out for number one. In some way, that will help them promote their own agenda. What Paul's talking about here are those who have genuine servant hearts, who genuinely are interested in others, in serving, in helping others, and not always looking out for themselves. No, love is not self-seeking. Number eight, keep rating yourself in all of these. Love is not easily angered. How short is your fuse? Now, some folks are born with a short fuse. I know that. And some folks have greater struggles with their temper and with angry outbursts than others. But the question is, are you growing in that area? Are you mastering that more and more as you grow in the love of God? Or is your short fuse just as short as it ever was? It's not really a short fuse, it's a shortness of love, according to Paul. Number nine, love keeps no record of wrongs. That means love has a short memory when it comes to wrongs and being wronged. Love does not nurse a grudge. And if you are holding some ammunition that you can use the next time you're in an argument, and you can say, well, you remember when you did this, you need to erase that from your memory bank. Resolve to God that even if you do remember it, you will never use that. You will never dredge up the past. Love keeps no record of wrongs. Let it go. Number 10, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. Loving people don't rejoice when bad things happen, even to bad people. There's no joy in that. To hear that someone that you haven't liked suddenly falls from grace, or has a financial reversal, or has a partner that leaves them, loving people don't say, well, it's about time, they deserved it. No, there's never any joy when Satan wins in another person's life. Loving people don't laugh at Satan's exploits. And number 11, love always protects. Are you genuinely concerned about the dignity of others? When a brother or sister is caught up in sin, are you ready to go and help them? Are you ready to stop the gossip mill when the word goes out? Are you ready to run interference to help people who have been entrapped by Satan? Will you protect your brothers and sisters? Will you guard those you love? Number 12, love always hopes. I love people like that. who always see the best in others and who always are longing to see someone achieve greater goals and do better things rather than being naysayers. And then lastly, love always perseveres. Love does not give up. Love continues to help and reach out and bless. And so he concludes that lengthy definition with these words in verse 8. Love never fails. That's the victory of love. Love will win in the end. God's love for us will, in the last day, claim victory over all those who have lived by his love. That's why love is preeminent. Listen again to the words of Jesus recorded in Matthew chapter 22. Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and the greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself." And then he goes on to explain how everything else is a subset of love. He says, all the law. You go back and you read Genesis and Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy. All the law and the prophets, all the rest of it, hang on these two commandments. Love is the greatest of all. If this is the greatest commandment, and it is, then the greatest sin that any Christian could ever commit would be a failure to love, a failure to grow in love, in these attributes we've talked about. I am very grateful for all the things that we have that are going on in this church family, in our mission work, both local and abroad, and all the ministries and the service that we're doing. But I know that it's possible to do everything we're doing and still have wrong motives. We're the only ones who can look into our hearts and know whether our motives are pure or not. More than anything, I want this congregation to have a reputation, not just for all these ministry activities. The greatest compliment that anyone could ever give this church who walks in the doors and spends time here is to say, you know, Sunset is one of the most loving churches that I've ever been a part of, that I've ever seen. That is the greatest compliment anyone can give to any individual Christian, that they are a loving individual. And it's seen in these qualities we've just gone through. You know, Paul closes out chapter 13 by saying that love is the greatest. And if we want to put our best foot forward, it's not going to be because we've got a nice building or we sing well or we do this well or that well. It's going to be because we have loving hearts that are demonstrated clearly by our actions and our words. Jesus said in John 13:35, "By this all men will know that you're my disciples, if you love one another." And so we must drown every slight and every insult and every hurt feeling in the river of love and love our brothers and sisters. Did you know that love is the greatest motivation for Christian service? Sometimes we try to make each other do what we ought to do by hammering duty and commitment. And these are great qualities. But did you know that Jesus only once ever mentioned Christian duty? Only once did he ever use the word duty. In Luke 17:10, he said, "When you've done everything you were told to do, you should say, 'We are unworthy servants. We have only done our duty.'" Mentioned duty once, but you know what he talked about all the time? Love. Because love is the true motivation. Duty won't get it done. You can hammer people and say, "You need to be here. You need to give. You need to..." But if you teach people to love the Lord, Jesus said, "If you love me, you'll keep my commandments." Remember that meeting Jesus had with Peter? And the one question that he kept asking Peter, he said, Peter, do you love me? He didn't ask Peter, Peter, do you love sheep? He didn't say, Peter, do you love to teach sheep? Every time he said, do you love me? If you love him, you'll keep his commandments. I'll tell you right now, there is nothing that will keep a tired elder or a tired teacher or a tired sewing group lady or a tired funeral mill helper or a tired, you name all the ministries. There's no one that will keep a tired Christian going. There's nothing that will keep a tired Christian going like the love of Jesus in our hearts. And one last thing about love. It is the most accurate assessment of your standing before God. In 1 John 3, John said, we know that we have passed from death to life because we love our brothers. That's how you can tell. If you love your brothers. Anyone who does not love, John says, remains in death. Folks, love is everything. If we miss out on this, we have missed the boat entirely. Go home and read through this chapter and read this definition and work on your growth. Pray about it. In the areas in which you're deficient, pray about it and grow in love because that is everything. Jesus has demonstrated his love to us already. And those of us who've responded in faith to him, we have returned that love to him. We love because he first loved us. We have a loving God who wants to save us. He wants us to become like Jesus. This morning, if you've never bowed your knee to Jesus, this morning, if you need prayers, let us love you today. That's what we're doing when we pray for you. We're loving you. If you need to come, won't you come while we stand and while we sing?